you of the miracles of Jesus in class. And then tonight we will look at the miracles of Matthew chapter 8 in our sermon. Take the handout, Matthew at a glance. I won't go over all this with you, but there are two or three lines I think are very helpful. When you look at a book, a Bible book is a lot like putting together a puzzle. If you had a puzzle, you probably would first put together the straight edge pieces around the outside, and then you would go back and fill in the interior pieces. It's easier if you can see the outline or look at the picture on the box of the puzzle. Or when you come to a Bible book such as Matthew, it's helpful to know what you're looking for as the high points or the key points of a book. And that's true with any book. But here, Matthew at a glance, you notice that it has two main sections, chapters 1 through 11 and chapters 12 through 28. The offer of the king, the rejection of the king, first section, second section. But drop down to the third line and notice these key ideas of the book. Matthew 1 through 4, the presentation of the king, or you could say the qualifications of the king, that deals with his birth, his boyhood, his baptism, and his battle with Satan, those four key ideas. Matthew is about Jesus the king, and so here you have a man who is especially qualified to be God's king, and he was born of the Virgin, he defeated the devil in the wilderness, he was baptized in compliance to God's will. Proclamation of the king, that's the section that deals with the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5 through 7, the principles of the kingdom. Then the power of the king, where there's an emphasis given to the miracles that Jesus did. It would do little good for a man to be qualified and to have good principles to rule the kingdom if he did not have any power to enforce his rule and also to influence people. And so the miracles of Jesus show that he was qualified of God because he had the power of God. Then chapter 11, as we begin that section where he's rejected, there is a progressive rejection of the Jews. They become more and more opposed to him, especially the leaders. And then he focuses, beginning in chapter 16, the last 6 months of his ministry, primarily working with his apostles, those men he would leave behind in order to carry out his gospel after he went back to heaven. So in chapter 16 is when he took them on that, we would call a retreat to Caesarea Philippi, where he asked them, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And then, whom do ye say that I am? Thou art the Christ, Son of the living God. Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood I revealed this to thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And upon this rock, that truth about Jesus being the Son of God, I will build my church. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So he's focused on his apostles there. Then he reveals to them for the first time that he was going to go up to Jerusalem and going to be killed and resurrected the third day. And that's when Peter tries to turn him away from that mission. And Jesus tells him, "Get thee behind me, Satan." And so from that point on, Jesus is really riveting in on these 12 men, training them in the last section of the book. And then the presentation in chapter 19, beginning really, 20-29, you're at the last week of Jesus' life. He's going up to Jerusalem, and there he will be presented as the king, and they will reject him, they will arrest him, they will condemn him, and they will kill him, and then he will be resurrected. The last chapter of the book, the proof of the king, Jesus is brought back from the dead. So, you see that focus, the teaching of the throngs, the at-large teaching, and then the teaching of the 12 in chapters 1 to 11, and then especially 16 through the end of the book. Now, I wanted to focus on the very middle of the chart just for a minute. This is helpful if you ever try to put together a chronological list of the events of Jesus' life. It seems like it would be easy to do that, but it's very challenging because we don't always know exactly when one event happened in relation to another. And when you read from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you find that sometimes one of them will have an event happening in one section and another will have it happening later, and so that can be a challenge. Matthew especially is not interested in chronology as much as the theme that he's developing. Jesus is the king. The first section, of course, 1 through 4, that's chronological. Jesus is born, Jesus grows up, Jesus begins his personal ministry. So you got 30 years there that is chronological. And then the last part of the book, when you're dealing with Jesus and his going to Jerusalem, and his interactions that last week with his enemies, and finally his death, burial, resurrection. That's chronological. But that middle section, chapters really 5 through 10, is not chronological. He's developing a theme, and we'll see that more tonight in the sermon. So I'll just tell you that because as we go through the lesson today, you'll see that the miracles that are listed in Matthew 8 and 9 are not in the same order they're in Luke and Mark and Luke, especially. And that's because Matthew is developing his theme, showing the Jews that Jesus came to reach out to the outcast. He came to conquer Satan. And so there's a theme that's developed, but not in chronological order. All right, that's all I'll say about that handout. Let's pick up just still some summary verses. You're there in Matthew, so look at Matthew 4. When we're introducing the subject of the miracles of Jesus, this is where we first find miracles in the New Testament, the miracles of Jesus in the New Testament. Of course, the virgin birth was a miracle, but the first time that Jesus begins to work miracles. And Jesus went about, Matthew 4:23, all Galilee, teaching in the synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people, and his fame spread. So he started healing a few people, but then when word got out that he could do that, notice what happens in verse 24. And they brought unto him all sick people that were taken from divers diseases and torments. I guess there were some people that had doctor's appointments that canceled them and went to Jesus instead. Wouldn't you do that? There were those who had chronic illnesses that had given up hope, but they heard there's a prophet in Israel. He was able to heal the blind man, or he was able to heal a lame man, or he was able to... And so those who had those ailments say, well, I'm going to go see if he may be able to help me. So all these people come to him, and those that were possessed with devils, and those that were which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and he healed them, and there followed him great multitudes of people. So from one place to another, from Galilee to Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from Jordan. How far would you go if you were sick or injured or diseased? How far would you go to find a cure? Would you leave the county? Would you leave the state? If you could be absolutely assured that you could be cured, would you leave the country? So that's what the context is in and around where Jesus was. People were coming to him from all over, and he healed them. So that's a summary verse. Then chapter 20 of John, verse 30 says, and many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. Many other signs. Well, how many do you reckon? I mean, how many miracles did Jesus do while he was here? Well, look at John 21, verse 25, the last verse of the book of John, gives us an indication. And the answer to that question is John 21, 25, and there are also many other things which Jesus did, that would include his miracles, not limited to them, which if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. How many miracles did Jesus do? Many. We have a record of about 37 that happened to specific individuals. We'll see that in a minute. But there are a lot of verses that say like that when we just read in Matthew, that he healed all the people. Well, how many people was that? And then in another city at another time, he healed all those that came to him with diseases. How many was that? A lot of people. So Jesus likely healed thousands of people while he was on earth. The record that we have are select miracles that teach us a lesson that show generally his power in different areas. All right, 10 points. This is an overview. We'll go quickly through these. We're going to look at a lot of different verses, so I hope you'll turn with us. If you have trouble getting to passages, you might just want to listen, but I'll try to give you time. We're going to look at 10 points, just summary points, so we won't spend much time on these, and that's why you have this stapled handout, because most of this information you'll be able to take out with you on these sheets, which I hope that you'll want to save and put somewhere, so next time you study these, you can refer to it. Let's start with the necessity of Jesus' miracles. It was necessary for Jesus to prove who he was when he came. 1 Corinthians 1:22 says the Jews require a sign. You see that in John 2:18 when Jesus cast them out, cast the money changers out of the temple. And, well, you're in John. Just flip back to John chapter 2, verse 18, and see an example of the Jews requiring a sign. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, "What sign showest thou unto us, seest that thou doest these things?" Prove to us that you have authority from God to go into the temple and cast out. This is our home court. What are you doing here? We're in charge here, not you. And so Jesus had gone in as the Son of God, as the Lord of Sabaoth, and He had corrected what was wrong in the temple. But they wanted to see a sign, and they often asked for signs. And the reason for that is, at least one reason for it, is because the Old Testament had predicted that when the Messiah came, He would work miracles. Now remember, Jesus is not the only person who ever came along and said, I'm the Messiah, I'm the one from God. And they had to test and see if this person is really genuine or if he's just a charlatan. In Isaiah 29, verses 18 and 19, and Isaiah 35, 4 through 6, it was prophesied that the Messiah would cause the lame to walk, the blind to see, the deaf to hear, cause the gospel to be preached to the poor. And so there were these check boxes. If here's a man who claims to be the Messiah, can he cause the lame to walk? And where's the blind person that says that he can see now because he interacted with this prophet? Where's the one who is mute? It also prophesies that. And now can speak to you. So the Jews required a sign for a good reason because God said that the Messiah would show these signs. So it was necessary for Jesus to show miracles. Let's look in the second place. Well, let's develop the other side of that coin. Although miracles were necessary when Jesus came, continuing miracles were not necessary. Even when Jesus was here, He didn't work miracles on demand. He did not always work the miracle that they wanted worked at the time. Look at Matthew 12, verses 28. This was repeated a number of times. You can find the parallel verses maybe four or five times. These same words are found. But Matthew 12, 38 and 39. Then certain of the scribes and the Pharisees answered saying, "Master, we would see a sign from thee." But He answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given to it." You see, it wasn't on demand. They couldn't just come up and say, "Prove your credentials, show your bona fides." Now, Jesus did not act that way. He came with a specific purpose according to a timetable, and Jesus did what God intended for Him to do, not what men tried to urge Him to do. Notice that they were going to get a sign, but it wasn't the sign they were expecting. But the sign of the prophet Jonas, the last part of verse 39, "For as Jonas was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." What He's saying is, you're going to get your sign, but not today. You're going to get the sign. Jonah was in the whale's belly, fish's belly, for 3 days, three nights. And you're going to see the Son of Man in the heart of the earth, in the grave, in the tomb, 3 days, three nights, as the Jews counted time. And then you're going to see, just as Jonah came back from the whale, so Jesus is going to come back from the grave. That's going to be your sign. That will show you that I am the Son of God. Now, God limits signs. Look at Matthew 8, Mark 8, 11 and 12. Mark 8. It's going to be similar to the one that we just read. Mark 8, 11 and 12. "And the Pharisees came forth and began to question with Him and seeking of Him a sign from heaven, tempting Him." Can you hear Jesus say that? Verse 12. "And He sighed deeply." You see His frustration? See His humanity? They are provoking Him. "In His spirit and saith, Why doth this generation seek after a sign? Verily I say to you, there shall no sign be given unto this generation." And He left them. So, God limited the signs. God gave them different signs than they thought they wanted. Signs were not an on-demand experience. So, signs were necessary, but signs were not required in every instance. And further, signs were not intended to continue to all generations. You and I have the signs that Jesus was the Son of God. We've never seen them with our own eyes or heard His messages with our ears or experienced His healing and our miraculous healing in our bodies. But we know that He did those things because we have an accurate record of it. John 20:30 again, and many other signs truly to Jesus in the presence of His disciples. We're not reading this book. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, Son of the living God, and believe in my life through His name. So these signs are written so that we have a record of them. Just as I believe just as strongly tonight or today that Jesus worked these miracles, having read them, than I would if I had seen them, and you do as well. 1 John 1:1-3, John said, being the eyes of humanity, the apostles were our eyes and our ears, and their record is the record for us. He said, our eyes have seen, our ears have heard, our hands have handled, we've looked upon or gazed or studied Him, and we know that our record is true. So John said, I know this is true because I was with Him. I saw Him, I heard Him, I lived with Him for 3 years as they traveled around. He saw Him under all circumstances, privately, publicly, and when He was tired, when He was well, just in every circumstance. And He said, Jesus is the Son of God. So those verses, I think, are the other side of that same coin, also important for us to see. It's not necessary that the Word be reconfirmed in every generation. Hebrews 2:3, it has been confirmed to those of us to us through those who heard Him. All right, now number two. The list of Jesus' miracles. That's what you have on your second handout, first page. This is from A.T. Robertson's A Harmony of the Gospels. He lists 33 miracles. Most sources would say there are 37 miracles of Jesus. And you'll find different numbers. And the reason for that is because how do you count a miracle? When Jesus, for instance, healed all those sick people that were brought to Him, but you don't know the name of any of them, that's not counted here. But Jesus worked a miracle. When Jesus, in John 21, told them to cast the net on the other side of the boat, was that a miracle? Well, most would count that as a miracle. Some would not. What about, well, there's just a lot of instances like that. And so there's some judgment. But anyway, there's at least 33 miracles recorded, probably 37, depending on how you count it, might be a little more. But these are individuals where we have either the name of the person or the location of the event, not just a general summary of miracles. I'm not going to go through it any more than to make one correction here. On number 11, that should be Mark. Let me make sure. Maybe Luke. It's not Matthew because there are no miracles in Matthew chapter 7. So it is Luke chapter 7. So just mark that out and write it under Luke, the third column over. The verse numbers are correct, 7:11-17 on the raising of the widow's son. But it should be Luke and not Matthew. We will come back to this list in a minute because the other sheets are keyed to it. So that 1-33, you're going to see those numbers on the other sheets, and that's important because these are listed in chronological order. You could find different chronological lists, but this one seems to me to be pretty close, if not the right list. Yes. Yeah. You're exactly right. I want to save that discussion for a minute. I'm going to come back to it, but you're exactly right that even though people saw a miracle, they did not necessarily believe in Him. Hopefully we'll get to that toward the end of the class. Look at number 3 on our list of 10, the order of the miracles. Again, this is chronological order on your sheet, beginning with making the water into wine, which John 2:11 says was the first miracle. So we know that Jesus did not work any miracles as a boy or as a teenager. As a young adult, his first miracle was when he began his personal ministry at age 29 or so, being about 30, Luke says, Luke 3:23. That was his first miracle. If you have studied John before, you might remember that of the 3.5 years of Jesus' ministry, only John covers the first year. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all start with year 2. John 1 through 5, therefore, any miracles that occurred in that section would of necessity be the earliest miracles. John 2, changing the water to wine, is his first one. And then the only other one that's in that section is the healing of the nobleman's son, John 4, 46 to 54. And then the third miracle causing the big catch of fish, Luke 5, 1 to 11. And then I won't go through the list. We'll refer to some of these later. But I will drop down with you to see the last miracles that Jesus did. And number 30 on your list, healing blind Bartimaeus. That's when Jesus is in Jericho on the way to Jerusalem. And that's, you know, that's the last time that he will pass through there. And so remember, they were calling out to him. And they were desperate. They would not have that opportunity again. And then causing the fig tree to wither and die, healing Malchus's ear after Peter cut it off, and when Jesus was being arrested, and then some would list the catching of the big fish, the second big catch of fish, John 21, 1 through 14. That's the order of them. That's we'll come back to that. Well, let me just go ahead and do that with you now. Go to Matthew chapter 8. I have gone through with some in a class before that some of you were in, marking the miracles of Matthew chapters 8 and 9, but some of you have not probably marked those before. So I'm going to do that with you presently. If you like to mark in your Bible, I put a box around the key word in so that when you look at the page, the different miracles just jump out at you. You can follow them easily. You may not want to mark in your Bible, that's fine. You might just want to make a note of this, but I think intelligent marking in the Bible is a good practice. It's helpful to be able to remember things that you wouldn't be able to remember long term otherwise, and also to see the divisions and key ideas on a page. Matthew 8, verse 2, put a box around the word leper. This is the first specific miracle in Matthew, the leper. Lord willing, tonight we'll talk about these first three. The second one is in verse 5, the centurion. I put half a box around centurion, leaving an open end. And then the next verse, the word servant, closed the box. You can either do all those words. I just did those two words, centurion, servant, because that's the one who was healed. You drop down to verse 14, Peter's wife's mother. Those three words. She had a fever. Jesus said, that's the third miracle. The fourth is in verse 23. It's beginning in 23, but let's say, oh, there it is in verse 26. Rebuked the winds. That's where he stilled the sea. Rebuked the winds, those three words. It really begins in 23, so that's full, that whole section. Then the next one is verse 28. Two possessed with devils. Those four words, the middle part of verse 28. Two possessed with devils. I may be going too fast for you. Anybody need me to go back through that? You got that? 16. Yeah, 16 is one of those general verses. Last time we went through it, we marked it. I wasn't going to skip it this time. But you could do healed all the sick in verse 16, but that's not a specific miracle. It's a summary of, you know, like Matthew 4, 23. Then in chapter 9, verse 2, man sick of the palsy. Palsy is paralysis. We'll talk about that tonight too. The next one is in chapter 9, verse 18. Ruler and daughter, those two words. This is Jairus' daughter that's raised, but ruler, daughter. And then as he's on the way to that situation, a woman comes up behind him and touches his garment, and she's healed. So you got a miracle inside the discussion of another miracle, and that's verse 20. Woman, issue of blood. Those words in verse 20. A woman, issue of blood. The next one is in verse 27. Two blind men. Verse 32, dumb man, King James, mute man. And that's it. So those are the miracles. Now, I just did that so that I could go back through with you now and show you that they're not in chronological order in Matthew's account. Probably would not want to write these numbers in your Bible because you wouldn't remember what they were later. But let me just show you. The first miracle that Matthew records, look on your sheet on the top, the stapled handout. The first miracle is the leper. Where is that on your list of chronological miracles? Number 6. So Matthew's first miracle is number 6, on the 6th miracle Jesus did. Then the second one is in verses 5 and 6, the centurion servant. Where is that on the list? Well, it's number 10. So now you've gone from 6 to 10, but watch what happens next with Peter's wife's mother being healed. Where is that on your list? Number 5. So he's not in order. Matthew is developing a theme. We'll see what that theme is tonight. That's very fascinating. I hope you'll be able to be here at 6 and I enjoy the study. But so they're going out of order. The next one is, still the storm? And that's number 13. The next one is the demon-possessed man, number 14. Palsy, number 7. The woman with the issue of blood is number 16. The Jairus' daughter, 15. Two blind men, 17. Mute man, 18. So the last 4 or 5 are in order, but the first ones are not. All right, that's all we'll say about the order of the miracles. I think that's helpful to know because it can throw you off if you're reading and trying to figure out chronology, comparing Matthew to Luke, for instance. Sometimes the events will be in slightly different order. The types of miracles. There are 4 broad categories of miracles. Look on the back of the first sheet. Notice that Jesus worked 9 miracles that showed Him ruling nature. Water to wine, catch a fish, storm to cease, food to multiply, Peter walked on the water, so forth. So 9 miracles showing His power over nature. Then Jesus worked 17 miracles restoring health to individuals. Everything from a leper to a cripple to a withered hand to a bleeding woman to blindness, deafness, a stooped woman, dropsy, lepers, Malchus's ear. Then the third category is demon, casting out demons, 4 of those miracles. And then the last, raising the dead, Jesus raised 3 from the dead, the widow's son, Jairus' daughter, and Lazarus. So the 4 major types of miracles. Some sources would add another one, which would be creation, because Jesus, everything that was made was made by Jesus. So before He ever came to earth, you had the creation miracle. But this is focused on His miracles while He was here. All right, let's look at the next one. Number 5, the locations of Jesus' miracles. I have written this in my Bible on the page that has Matthew chapter 8, since that's the beginning of miracles. You might not have room to do that. You might not have interest in doing that. But I just threw out that idea in case you want to. But you've got it on your sheet, so you can do it later if you want to. And also, while I'm mentioning that, I'm sure your Bible's like mine. It has a sheet that covers, that has the words, you know, the New Testament on it. Well, there's a lot of room to write things about the New Testament on that page. So whenever you, I use that page to write notes that are about the entire New Testament, like an overview. Facts. But then the next page is a blank page before the book of Matthew. That's a great page to write things about the gospel accounts and Matthew himself, the book of Matthew. And I got the outline that we went over briefly, key words, key discourses, Jesus' deity in Matthew, things only found in Matthew, so forth. So that's a good use of the pages that you always have with you when you have your Bible. And then if you're teaching a Bible class or you're studying with someone or just reading Matthew again, take the time to read through that again. You get the key ideas and then you read the book and it really helps in your Bible study. So I said all that to say that on the page that has Matthew 8, I wrote where Jesus' miracles were performed. And that's from this list, page 3 of your handout. Jesus worked 20 miracles in Galilee. I have a map so you'll be able to follow along. You notice Galilee is in the middle of that map. Or if you're listening to this later, if you have maps in the back of your Bible, find the one that says Palestine in New Testament times. A lot of times, there won't be as much of the northern territory included on that map, and Galilee will be at the top of most maps, because that was generally the edge of Palestine where the Jews lived. And once you got above Galilee, you were in Syria, and Phoenicia, and Jesus did work one miracle up there, and so that's why that's included here. Anyway, Galilee is where Jesus lived most of his life, and it's where he spent most of his 3 years of ministry. He did go down to Judea on the southern part of the map, and that's where Jerusalem is, where the temple is, where the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees and all were situated. So he would go down there for the feast days, and of course at the end of his life he went down there to present himself to Israel. But he did not work as many miracles in the south because they didn't believe in him. You don't have conversions in the south. There's hard hearts there. A lot of rejection, no believing, or very limited. No, certainly not among the ruling class. But in Galilee, much more success, and so more of his miracles were performed there. 20 of them in Galilee, 6 in Judea, 3 in Decapolis. Decapolis is on the east side of the Jordan River. Jordan River runs right down the middle of Palestine. Sea of Galilee is the smaller body of water in the middle of the land toward the top of the map. The Dead Sea, the larger body of water in the middle of the map at the bottom. And the Jordan River runs between those two. So on the east Jordan River, you see Decapolis and also Perea. Jesus worked 3 miracles in Decapolis and 2 in Perea. 1 in Samaria, which is across the river from Decapolis. And then 1 miracle in Phoenicia. That's up at the top of the map where Jesus went out of the country. And the prophecy was that they that sat in darkness would see a great light. And so he went up there, and they got to meet him too. And he healed the Syrophoenician, the one who's called the Syrophoenician there. All right, that's all I will say about that. But you have the record, and you can study that more on your own. Let's go to the next one. Number 6, the record of Jesus' miracles. And that's your next sheet. Where are they found in the New Testament? Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels because they are very similar. They look at Jesus from the same view. That's what synoptic means. John is different. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are 80% the same and 20% different. John is 80% different and 20% the same. So John is not like Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it's a good thing because we have so much more information than we would have otherwise. What's the real value in having the same thing over and over, wherein you can know more about Jesus having something different? But it is good to have the more than one record of these events if there are different details given and if there's a different emphasis given. And that's what you have in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Well, Matthew has 18 miracles. And remember, these numbers are keyed to the list on the front so you know what order they're in. And also, if it is italicized, it means that only that book has the record of that miracle. Like, drop down to number 16, healing 2 blind men. That's only recorded in Matthew. Number 24, causing a coin to be in a fish. That's only in Matthew. And then there are 18 miracles in Mark. And notice down at number 20, healing a deaf and dumb man was only found in Mark. Healing the blind man, verse 22, number 22, only found in Mark. Jesus healed 6 different blind people. So this is a different person than the one we read about in Matthew 9. All right, that goes. Then Luke on the next page has 19 miracles. That would be expected since his gospel account is the longest, that he would have the most than he does. John, almost all sources you read would say John has 7 miracles. A.T. Robertson lists 8, and the one that's generally left out is the last one, the causing the big catch of fish, 21:1-4. John has these 7 signs. A lot of sermons have been preached on the 7 signs that show Jesus' power over natural world, death, disease, demons, so forth. So that's the record of them. Let's talk about number 7, the repetition of Jesus' miracles. I also wrote this in Matthew 8 at the top of the page, because it's good information to know when you're studying miracles. That's the next page. The repetition meaning, where, how many times are they found in the New Testament? One time, two times, three times, or four times? Only one miracle is found four times, that's the feeding of the 5,000. But you have 16 miracles that are only found one time in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And those are listed. You have 5 miracles that are recorded two times. And those are listed. Then you have 11 miracles that are recorded three times. Almost always that will be Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But you notice one occasion, John includes one that Luke did not, that Matthew and Mark do. Peter walking on the water. And then only one miracle recorded in all 4 gospel accounts, causing the food to multiply, feeding the 5,000. All right, that's all we'll talk about these sheets, except I'll just note that the last 2 pages, that's a little bit hard to follow in this format, but if you study it, it has some really interesting information. For instance, how many miracles were performed on men, how many were performed on women, how many were told, don't tell anybody that I've done this to you, 5. So a lot of little interesting tidbits about Jesus' miracles on those last 2 pages. All right, that's all we'll say about that. Let's move and talk about number 8, the proof of Jesus' miracles. We said earlier that our proof of Jesus' miracles is that they're recorded in the Bible, and therefore the trustworthiness of the Bible verifies the miracles that are recorded there. One of the new booklets that came out recently is on Can You Trust the Bible? I think that's probably in the foyer, and there's a lot of information there about why the Bible is trustworthy. You might want to consult that if you want to study that in more detail than we will here. But I'm just going to mention that all 3 possible classes of people verified the miracles in the New Testament. Enemies, John chapter 11, after Jesus raised Lazarus, they went back. Some people went back and told the Pharisees what Jesus had done. And notice what it said, what they said. These are not people that believed in him, but they admitted that his miracles were real. John 11:47, then gathered the chief priests and Pharisees a council and said, what do we, for this man doeth many miracles. His enemies verified his miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him. Those who were neutral, such as Nicodemus, John 3, Rabbi, we know thou art a teacher come from God, for no man could do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. So he was one of the ruling class, but he was honest enough to say, you've got to be from God, you're working miracles. And then his friends, of course, believed in his miracles. Matthew 9:8 is one example of that. I'm going to have to stop, but I want to talk about the purposes of Jesus' miracles. This is where I was going to get into what Mike brought up. I might do that tonight as an introduction to the lesson, look at the purpose of the miracles. Thank you for your attention this morning, and let me see what number 10 is. I might can go ahead and cover that one. Presentation. Yeah, that's what we'll do tonight too. So we'll cover those last 2 tonight, Lord willing, in our sermon.